The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll, episode 218. Wow, we are rolling along. And today, it's a very special show. For the first time ever since Lemmy passed away, his partner in rock and roll, his brother, the guitar player for Motorhead, Phil Campbell, is here on Talk is Jericho, giving an exclusive interview to me and to this show. First interview he's done, like I said, since the passing of the iconic frontman of Motorhead, Lemmy, and he's sharing some great stories and memories about his brother in arms. And we're going to kick it off with Phil Campbell on lead guitar on Fozzy's She's My Addiction. Crank it up. Here we go. Solo for She's My Addiction by Fozzy off the Sin and Bones record, and he's got some great stories today. Phil was in Motorhead for 32 years since he was a 22-year-old kid, and even he admits he's not quite sure what to do with himself now. He's so used to being out on the road. Motorhead was such road warriors, or in the studio with the band, very prolific output-wise for new material. But Phil is back in the studio. He's working on a solo album. He'll tell us about that. He's got some great stories about visiting Ronnie James Dio's house and winding up at another famous rocker's gated mansion who they didn't like each other. Great stories about Lemmy, pranks they pulled on each other, pranks that Phil pulled on other people. people, good stories, good laughs, and a great time. Very cathartic with Mr. Phil Campbell, Lord Wanksmith, Lord Wanker, Axsmith, whatever they call him, the king of comedy. Phil Campbell is here. So it's a great show to check out. I'm glad you're here. And if you've subscribed on iTunes, that is amazing. You'll never miss a show. And if you haven't subscribed yet, what are you waiting for, man? If you subscribe, you'll never miss an episode. You'll never have to remember to go download or stream Talk is Jericho. The show will be waiting for you every Wednesday and Friday morning like clockwork, automatically delivered right to the device of your schwanz. Doesn't get any better than that, does it, right? And hey, while you're subscribing on iTunes, take a minute, leave us a 5-star rating and comment. You know I love your feedback. If you show off your creativity and cleverness in the comment section, I might just read it out loud right here on this show, huh? What do you think about that? So subscribe, leave a 5-star rating and a clever comment, and help out Talk is Jericho. You know I appreciate it. All right, we're talking about the death of Lemmy at 70 years old. David Bowie passing away at 70 years old. Glenn Frey, who I gave a shout out to on Raw this week. Everyone's talking about the new kid in town. Of course, AJ Styles, but it's always good to drop a little rock and roll into the promos that I do. Glenn passed away as well at, I believe it was 69 or 70. So a lot of Jamie Bain passing away from Dio's band, Paul Kantner from Jefferson Starship. So many greats basically dying in the first month of 2016. And people are like, come on, death, take a break, take a holiday. This is ridiculous. But you got to think about this. I was doing a little research in that. So the modern era of rock and roll basically started in the 50s and then more so in the 60s. We have never had anything like that before. And also too about these guys still playing and still being around. When you were 40, when you were my age, 45 years old, like 20 years ago, you were considered like a super old man. Now, it's really not in your 40s and 50s and 60s. And even in the 70s, it's like, oh, he was 70. He died so young. Because these guys are still out there on the road gigging and performing. I mean, Lemmy played right up until the day he died, basically. Glenn Frey, the Eagles just finished their huge tour back in July or August. David Bowie, very prolific the last few years of his life, putting out new material. So it made me start to think, like, it's a surprise when these guys die, but we have to expect it. Because the guys that were huge in the 60s and 70s are now in their 60s and 70s and 80s. So I think over the next few years, you're going to see a lot of iconic, game-changing, world-changing performers passing away because basically it's old age. You know, I was looking through some stuff. I mean, you know, Fats Domino still alive. Little Richard still alive. Chuck Berry still alive. So, of course, when those guys pass away, it's going to be, oh, my gosh, here's another one. But they're 80-year-old men. You know, you don't last much longer in your life than that. You know, if you get to your 80s or 90s, or some people make it to 100, but you know what I'm talking about. It's like very difficult to, you know, to last longer than that for lack of a better term, right? So if you go through and see some of these iconic people, I mean, like I said, you know, Fats Domino, 88 years old. Chuck Berry, 89 years old. Harry Belafonte, 88 years old. You know, some really, really huge. Berry Gordy, the creator of Motown, 86 years old. So you can see, like, Loretta Lynn, 83. Petula, Yoko Ono, 82. Quincy Jones, 82. Willie Nelson, 82. Frankie Valli of the Four Seasons, 81. Pat Boone, 81. Leonard Cohen, 81. You know, so these guys are legit octogenarians, is that what it's called? Jerry Lewis is 80. Johnny Mathis is 80. So it's going to be no shock and no surprise when people start passing away. And those guys are kind of, you know, you hear their name, but not really active performers. But guys who are still out on the road. Mick Jagger, 72 years old. Stones touring right now in Brazil. Robbie Robinson, 72 years old, still playing and performing. Al Jardine with the Beach Boys, he's 71. Brian Wilson is 73. Aretha Franklin, 73. Graham Nash, 73. McCartney, probably the biggest rock star in the world. He's 73 years old. He's still out there performing and gigging. But when his time comes, it's going to be such a huge loss. But, you know, once again, this is the world we live in, you know. No matter how young at heart the guys are, and thank goodness for that because it gives us all, hope, it still shows that time goes on. You know, time stops for no man. Bob Dylan, 74. Simon and Garfunkel, both 74. I mean, you look at William Shatner, Talk is Jericho, double alumni, 85 years old. So And we've never had that before in this society, because most of the time when you, you know, got to be 40 or 50, that was it. You packed up, you retired at 65, you got your gold watch, went home. But these guys are still out there. And then plus they all changed the world so much. They're such iconic, not just for their music, but for their effect on society. I mean, you talk about guys in the 60s like the Beatles or the Stones or, you know, Crosby, Stills and Nash and Neil Young and all these type of guys. They almost changed what society was doing, how people dressed, how people acted, how people treated each other. It was a lot, a true rock star in that sense. I don't know if we'll get too many more of those. You know, after U2 and Metallica and Guns N' Roses and Nirvana, those type of bands that changed the world, we don't really have that anymore. And I think maybe Slipknot and Avenged Sevenfold are like the last of the Mohicans when it comes to heavy rock bands that are legit arena touring bands. And you got bands like, you know, Imagine Dragons or 21 Pilots or... Fall Out Boy, 5 Seconds of Summer. They're arena rock bands, but they're still not... There's something disconnected about those bands when you compare them to the Beatles and the Stones and Metallica and Iron Maiden and U2 and I guess bands that really kind of changed the genre of music that they were playing. I think we've seen so much and so much has been done. It's going to be really difficult to change the world with a band and with a style of music. You know, Metallica, the first super heavy mainstream thrash band. But now everybody's that heavy. I mean, you go on to Fall Out Boy and they've got thrashy parts, for example. I mean, I don't know if they do, but you know what I'm talking about. So who can be the next band that changes the rules? We don't know. And that mystique of those bands are gone too, because everything is so accessible now on YouTube and on, you know, social media and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, your favorite band back in the day, you wanted to go see them, you had to go to the arena. Now, maybe I'll skip going to the arena and, you know, the Guns N' Roses, you know, reunion, quasi-reunion, whatever you want to call it. I'll miss the first couple shows and I'll check them out on YouTube. I'll see what the set list is and it eliminates a lot of the surprises of going to the show yourself. And that's my fault, but that's just, you know, it's very convenient. Once again, it's the world that we live in, right? So when you're talking about the Beach Boys and the Stones or Neil Diamond at 74 years old, those type of guys, Ringo Starr is 75, you know, right? So, you know, like I said, 20 years ago, these guys would be your doddering old fool grandfathers, like sitting at home gardening, you know, talking about the old days with a Cadillac Cutlass and their chinos and all that sort of stuff. It's not like that anymore. Those guys are still very vibrant, you know, contributing members to showbiz, and they all look great and they've got, you know, cool hair and they all still rock and still sing good. And I like that, but it's not a surprise when you see, oh my gosh, he died and this guy's going to die. And I think over the next few years, I mean, you look at Elton John and like I said, those type of guys as well. Everybody is getting up there. So when they pass away, don't be shocked and don't be surprised and don't be sad, because if you can last, I mean, someone was telling me the other day that their grandmother died in their sleep after eating, you know, bacon and eggs and smoking 2 cigarettes at 95 years old. Like if you can go out that way, you're cool. You know, I read about a famous BMX rider today, like a great mountain biking guy. His name was Kelly Greenwood. Maybe that's what his name is. Kelly McGarry. Sorry. Passed away at 33 years old. Great mountain biker, like extreme mountain biker. He died extreme mountain biking. Right. So if you can like die doing what you love doing, then is it really so bad after all? You know, like I said, like Lemmy touring till the end and then basically passing away very quickly. Like, you know, at 70, 80 years old, if you can live your life the way you want to live it and enjoy your life and enjoy yourself and have a great time doing it, then, you know, we all got to go out somehow. So I think the lesson to be learned is, yes, we lost Glenn Frey and David Bowie and Lemmy and Jimmy Bain and, you know, Alan Rickman and all these very talented, great, very great artists. But these guys were in their late 60s, early 70s, getting into their 80s. So it shows that the world has really changed. And now it's not so much age, really literally is just a number. And now it's about the attitude you have, about the work that you're doing, and about the you know, the lives that you can touch while you're doing it. So God bless all of those guys. God bless all of the icons who are still alive and still rocking, still killing it every night on stage. It gives us all inspiration. And like I said, at the top of the heap of that inspiration is William Shatner at 85, still touring the world, as you heard on Talk is Jericho a few weeks ago. So anyways, talking about Lemmy, talking about Phil Campbell, great guitar player, one of the backbones of Motorhead, Lemmy's right-hand man for 32 years. and in one day loses his best friend, loses his bandmate, and loses his gig. So we're going to talk to Phil, some great stories, his first interview since the passing of Lemmy coming up. All right, on the line is one of the biggest tosspots I've ever met in my life, and a very good friend of mine, Mr. Phil Campbell. And it's great to talk to you, man, today.
Hey, Chris, how you doing, man? It's great to talk to you, as always. You know, I guess we'll have to be kind of behaved on the phone this time, because it's going out. It's not a private conversation.
Yeah.
We normally abuse each other big time and everything like that, yeah. And I believe Lars Ulrich's calling in. I believe Lars has a pre-recorded a question for me later, yeah?
I think it's possible, yeah. He's got a question for you.
Okay,
ask a question.
Out. Anyway, good. Yeah, Chris, yeah. So this is the first time I've spoke publicly since, you know, my brother-in-arms passed away and everything. But it's an honor. I'm glad it's with you anyway, because you were a good friend. You understood what we were about and everything.
Yeah.
And, so here we go.
It's been a rough couple of weeks for everybody. And the one person that you meant, like you just said, nobody has really heard much from Phil Campbell, and that I'm sure it was probably a huge blow, like you said, your brother in arms, because you were in Motorhead for over 30 years.
32 years next month it would have been, Chris, yeah. I'm trying to work out, there's probably 5,000-ish shows, about 16 studio albums, about 20 million jokes, and about 25 million miles, trains, planes, and automobiles, and... I'm still in shock, actually. I know. He was like a Slash told me. He was a constant. Like, he's always been here in our lives, Lem. You know, for you, I'm speaking for yourself and many people out there.
Yeah.
But he did it his way, anyway. I'm really proud of the he did it so... He really did it. He lived it as he wanted to live it. And not many people can actually do that, 100%.
You know, when you're looking at his funeral, I'm sure you might have watched it on YouTube, or maybe you didn't, but I was saying to Slash, actually, you'll never see another guy in the rock and roll world that has the amount of people that came to his funeral and that reached out and that were affected by the death of Lemmy. I mean, you look at that funeral with Dave Grohl and Ozzy and Gene Simmons.
Everyone,
and
I know.
Everybody's there.
I couldn't even go, Chris, because I've got this minor health problem, and
right.
It's been sorted now. But my surgeon, he advised me. He said, he didn't want me to fly for 11 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So I just sent a 6-foot mirror with a line of his favorite on it in flowers. You know, it was a mark of respect. But I watched it. It was hard to watch, and. I haven't watched anything else yet. I haven't read any more articles or nothing. It's really difficult for me at the moment. But it will come. It's just going to take a lot of time.
Well, and like you said, I mean, this happened so quickly because I was at Lem's birthday party, which was December 13th. And, I mean, and you were with him, obviously, every day. He looked really, really weak and kind of, you could see that. I was like, oh, man, I wonder what's going on. But then he gets the announcement of being very, very sick with cancer. And then 2 days later, he's gone. So a huge surprise for everybody. And I'm sure even the bigger surprise for you.
What happened to our end? The thing is, he played better on this last tour now before Christmas than he did in the summer.
Really?
He looked a lot thinner. He didn't look so well. But he played his ass off, man. He played so well. You know, he was amazing, he was. You know, but, you know, I was the one that ended up. I had a brief spell in hospital. But he was amazing. He didn't look brilliant, but I couldn't believe how he was playing. He must have pulled every ounce of energy out. I don't know if he had a premonition or not. But we were told after the Boxing Day thing that he had, like, 6 months. He was told on Boxing Day, 6 months, between 2 and 6 months, but it's more likely to be, like 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
So then, the day after them, we get a call saying, "Oh, you better come over within a week." And I'm shit. I thought I was speaking to Mickey and everything. And then, during that call, it was all over.
And that was
never got a chance. Like
so fast,
but,
right?
It was brilliant. I did everything else with a guy. I just didn't make his funeral, but I did everything else with a guy. So that makes me feel real cool.
Well, absolutely. Because you know? the last couple of years for Motorhead, because you know the constant you know kind of joke was that Lemmy and Keith Richards would out survive all of us. And Lemmy, up until about 2 years ago, never stopped and looked and played the same. But it's been a hard couple of years for him. He was slowly kind of declining in health.
Yeah, but he was a surprising guy. You know him. You knew him very well yourself, Chris. But
sure.
He was full of surprises. I remember one time, it must have been 15, 20 years ago, we went playing some place in Germany, I don't know, like a big club or whatever. It wasn't a bad gig, and he got pissed off with something like that, and I don't know, and we walked off the stage, and it was a metal door. It was like 5 inches thick metal door, the dressing room, and he just grabbed it and pulled it off his hinges. I thought, ooh, bloody hell. So I didn't argue with him very much after that. I saw the occasional peanut at him, but that was about it, really. He was an original, they've all, it's bad, it's been a really bad time for everyone. But the outpouring of grief and good wishes has been amazing. My phone, it didn't stop, and my Twitter things and all of the stuff, you know, the media.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable, you know, and I got so much respect for everyone, really. And I'm really glad that I could spend all that time with him, you know.
Well, it's great. Lemmy and Motorhead and yourself and Mickey, it got to the point where you guys became an iconic band. And like you said, just a constant, like Motorhead has always been there. So I think when fans realize what happened with Lemmy, it's like they don't want to let Motorhead go as well. It's like you lose Motorhead as well as losing Lemmy, which that's kind of a double whammy.
I know, yeah. It's like that. I'm feeling it more worse than anyone. I've saw Lem. I was with Lem more than I've been in my family. I've been married for 33 years, like, and stuff. But everyone, just affecting everyone.
Yeah.
Even if you didn't, I truly believe, even if you never met Lem, But when you were a music lover, people must be seriously affected by it, you know.
Well, yeah,
it was great. I'm really honored. I did all that time with him, you know.
Let me ask you a question. Right, actually, the last thing that I ever did with Lem when I went to his birthday party, I went and talked to him just briefly. He wasn't really talking much, but he stuck up his pinky. And I thought that was a little bit strange, so I gave him, like, you know, a pinky swear, pinky shake. But then I realized that that's what you and Lem did every night on stage.
We did it on Metropolis. I think it was, yeah. Yeah, well, I used to walk across, and I used to stand on stage right to him. And we put our little fingers together, and then I hold the feet back every single night. And on the last show in Berlin, which, of course, we didn't realize it was... I was going to be the last ever Motorhead show in Berlin. I thought, but I'll sneak across to his left, you know, just because I'm Phil Campbell, just to, you know, we always messed about on stage. We had a good laugh. And it was just weird when I realized that afterwards. It's the only time I've done it in 5,000-odd shows, went to the left. It doesn't mean it's not a big deal. Like, I'm not going to change my religion or anything thinking about it. It's just weird, like. And
yeah.
I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know if you had some... I'm not sure, like, you know, but I know he was pumping it out amazingly at the end, like an 18-year-old. It was brilliant. He must have taken everything from his heart and soul, Chris,
to be able to play like that.
Which he probably did, yeah. So, it was brilliant, yeah. It was amazing he was.
Was that pinky shake just kind of a sign of respect or just a tradition that you guys did?
I don't know, just a tradition. I don't know how we started out, like.
I was just curious.
I don't know.
It was
our middle fingers have probably been up our own asses too much, so we had to use the pinky. Like, I don't really know. It's so long back, it's like going back into medieval times. I really don't know how it started. It's one of them things we used to do. Like,
so what was your last conversation with him? Was it in the dressing room and I'll see you later type of thing?
I think we came off. We did the bow. We did the bow, and we all have separate dressing rooms, like, because. Because it's better that way, you know. You know,
right?
For various reasons, you know. I have sheep in my room. Mickey likes to sleep. Lem likes to have chicks in his room.
Yeah.
So I think we walked back, and it was the last gig of the tour. And I just shook his hand. I said, Lem, nice one, man. Brilliant. You played great tonight. I'll speak to you. I'm still thinking of something to get you for your birthday. Because he gives me guitars for my birthday every year. Like, you know, I've had three guitars off him for various birthdays. I had one last year, really cool guitars, you know, and I didn't want to buy him just a little trinket. So that was basically my last conversation. But I always, when we did the bow on stage, he let me be in the middle and always give him a good grip, you know.
Yeah.
But,
What was the dynamic between the three of you and Motorhead? I mean, a lot of comedy, a lot of laughing. Did you guys ever get in big arguments or anything like that?
Yeah, we'd argue over the music, but I would argue over what time, over the volume, Mickey D's voice on the tour bus. But we'd argue over the music, but basically, no, we were after a good few years together. I mean, Mickey was with us 22 years or something like that.
Yeah,
22 years. But you learn when you spend that much time together, Chris. You learn to respect everyone's going to be different. I used to do stuff that Mickey wouldn't particularly agree with, or Lem, and everyone would be the same. But you would learn to accept it, you know. And you know, there's the occasional boundary. You try not to overstep everyone's boundaries and that. But there was a lot of humor in it. Mickey could be the most amazingly funny guy. We all could. When the three of us got together, like it was nothing quite like it, really. No. Don't believe it. I don't believe it, the stuff people tell me myself. Remember when you did this? Remember when you guys did that? You know, you went out with us enough.
Yeah. Well, you're quite the prankster. Did you ever pull any pranks on Lemmy?
Millions of them. We have to do an entire show just on pranks.
Well, tell us a couple.
He's had a few sandwiches, which the fillings weren't quite what he expected. But.
The old, was it the Spinal Tap shit sandwich?
I'm not saying anything, no. No, it's a lot. It was nothing vicious. Like, yeah, we've done all sorts of stuff. Like, I remember one, from funny story with, something funny, Victor, our assistant, one of our assistants, Lem was having trouble like 6 months ago, putting one of his boots on, and his two assistants there go, push, and they sweat in, and they're trying to pull one of his boots on, and it, after like 20 minutes, they found out Lem still had a pair of socks stuck in a boot. I wasn't actually there for that, but I can imagine the sweat on Victor, poor Victor and Ian,
right,
and everything. I know.
Well, you mentioned being in Motorhead for 32 years.
Just about, yeah.
How did you get the call to join, and what did you think at first? Because Motorhead was notorious for being a pretty heavy partying, crazy rock and roll band.
Yeah. I used to party heavier than Motorhead when I was 16. Anyway,
right.
My wife just said, I just applied for a job and I ended up getting it. I think it's quite well documented, but.
Well, I'm just curious, though, like, did Lemmy know you at all, or did you have any relationship, or did you just show up for an audition cold and he liked you the best?
I always thought I met Lem first when I was 12. I still got a program at home when he was in Hawkwind.
Okay.
I went to see Hawkwind when I was 12, and he was signed as, he was only when I came out in the foyer in the Cardiff Capitol Theatre, and he signed his old autograph. It was, like Lem or something like that, and then, then my old band, Persian Risk, we supported Motorhead in Cornwall on the last gig of the British tour with Brian Robertson. So I went in his dressing room, didn't I? Just steamed in and said, come on, where you guys go? What are you guys doing? Let's have some beer off here, whatever it was, blah, blah, blah. And then I only found this out recently, actually, Chris. I'd always been led to believe that, like, when Lemmy did interviews, he said, well, Phil Taylor liked... It's like when me and Wurzel were like the last two up for the job. You know, Motorhead always been a three-piece. And he said, well, I've listened to him do an interview. He said, well, one of us liked Phil and one of us liked Wurzel. And then we ended up, we set off. We loved the both of you guys. Like, and I always thought for some reason that Filthy wanted me and Lem wanted Wurz. But I found out, I don't know, a year or so ago, not that long ago, that it was Lem wanted me, which...
Really?
Which I was quite shocked and quite pleased with that. Like, but it's been bad, man. Filthy's gone, Wurzel's gone, and I'm the only member left from the 1916 album lineup and
yeah,
all that stuff, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of a...
Everyone knows it's really bad, Chris. It's not everyone knows it.
Mm-hmm.
This thing, I know. But we've got to keep going, man, haven't we?
Yeah, it's funny. I have a picture of from about 1998 of the guys that I used to hang out with. And there was four of us in the picture, and I'm the only one still alive now. And I saw that picture the other day, and it's kind of strange, you know what I mean? It makes you feel sad, but it makes you feel kind of weird, and it's not a great feeling to know that.
No, it's not. I know. You're going to be alive for a while, though, because I saw a picture of you jumping about 6 foot in a bloody air the other day.
Yeah, camera angles.
You bastard. You're lucky, sod. You wait till you get to my age, Chris. You'd be out of breath walking downstairs, pal.
But that became kind of your role in Motorhead, especially over the last few years where Lemmy wasn't really moving much. You kind of had to pick up the slack on stage and move back and forth quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm the only one, isn't I? It's Mickey stuck behind the drums, and Lem's stuck by the... Even before Lem got a little sick years ago, mm-hmm. It was fun. I was always kind of more reserved in the old days. But then when Wurzel left, I thought, right, let's go it. And I like to sweat. You know, I don't have unless it's really bad or I'm pretty sick. I don't have a fan going there. I like to sweat. So anyway, I lose weight. I don't go to gymnasiums like you lot. You know.
Yeah, well,
you go. You just go and read a paper anyway, don't you?
Yeah, read a paper, go get a protein smoothie, and just leave. Just to say I went.
Peddling, reading a paper.
Yeah.
It's not really a paper, though, is it? There's a certain adult mag in the middle of it. It looks like a Financial Times, but I know you. I know you guys.
Tell me the story. I mean, like I said, you got so many pranks, and you told me a great one before with Dio and the USA Today newspaper. Speaking of papers.
Oh, USA. Oh, yeah, yeah. This was actually the best prank that I've ever done, and I'm glad I came up with it. It was Judas Priest, Heaven and Hell, Motorhead, Testament on tour for about, I don't know, a month or whatever. So poor Chuck Billy, the night before in Los Angeles, the penultimate night, the night before the last gig, he said, Campbell, it's the last night of the tour tomorrow. We're going to outdo you. And I went, oh, Chuck, just go away. I said, I'm in a different... league in you. I said, all right, go, just go away. Right, so then I forgot, and I said to my manager, Todd, I said, oh, I'll probably rent a horse or something like that. And I forgot about it. And then the next day, it was the Shoreline Amphitheater, not far from San Francisco, Chris.
Yeah.
And the tour manager came in, right, last call, anyone want anything from the rudder? I said, yeah, hang on. I want six bags of marbles. That was like a plan C. I said 25 USA Today newspapers and one large horse. So they turned up later with a horse. So what I did, the marbles were just in case they couldn't get a horse and everything. So when Testament brought out, everyone knew about this except for the band Testament, Chuck's girlfriend, Tiff,
yeah.
Knew about it. And she said to Chuck, she said, look, after the third song, but so gullible, you American people, like whatever. But after the third song, she said, just stop and just take a moment and say, we'd like to thank Priest and Motörhead and Heaven and Hell. And that was the cue. So I came home with a dress that Ronnie Deal gave me, blue wig, long wig, and riding his horse. Lemmy had a sweeping brush and a towel over his head, like a thing like that. And Mickey had mine. I like to point out it's mine.
Right.
And my Mexican outfit. So it looked like he was riding a donkey. And then they couldn't deal with it. They couldn't deal with it like that. So that was the first band.
Right.
And then I got changed quick into my Motörhead clothes or whatever, did the Motörhead show. Then as soon as we finished, as Heaven and Hell, the crew were setting up, I rushed out into the crowd. I said, look, I started distributing only myself, single-handedly, 25 copies of USA Today newspapers. I said, look, it's the last gig tonight. I'm playing the pranks on everyone. So it was I said, pass them around. Right. So basically, when Heaven and Hell came on stage, it was Tony Iommi in it and Ronnie and Vinny and everyone, like, you know. So when he came on stage like that, the first 15 rows were reading a piece of newspaper each like that. And he looked across the stage right and I'm there. Give them the finger up, you know, it was me straight away. And a Judas Priest wanted to cancel, I heard, but
I didn't think they wanted to go on. They didn't. But I didn't. That was the thing. I didn't do nothing to priests, see? But they were crapping themselves all thing. That was one of my best, actually. That. But it's got to be done, hasn't it?
Oh, that's up there, man. That's a great one.
The picture's available on the internet as well. I'll send you a couple anyway, Chris, yeah.
I'd love to see it.
They had a big laminate on the horse. It had to be tranquilized as well because of the volume.
Oh, my.
The horse was called Amber. Yeah, it had a big, like the size of A4 laminate round his neck. It had to be tranquilized as well. I still send postcards to the horse as well, yeah.
So what, yeah. You mentioned that you asked for the marbles just in case the horse didn't make it. What were you going to do with the marbles?
Just roll them across the bloody stage at random, see what happened. You know.
How was it?
It would have been a bit cheaper, but just throw them across the stage, you know, when the lights go out, when it's a bit of dark. songs.
Let me ask you this. You know, when you first get into a new band, it always takes a while to kind of get to really know the people in the band and really get to feel that companionship with them. When you first got into Motorhead, was Lemmy easy to get along with? Was he a little bit gruff? Or how long did it take before you really felt he was your friend?
It was weird after the first audition. It was like you said, oh, come on, we go out for a drink. It was just me and him that night.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to the St. Moritz Club in London. So we go down, it's like a basement club in Wardour Street. This is a bit odd, actually. So I'd never been in London in my life. Well, not really. You know, I didn't know anyone in London. So he said, what do you want to drink, Phil? I said, oh, I don't know. Just give me a beer. So I'm there. I'm sitting on the table by myself now. It's about 10 o'clock at night. I don't know anyone there. Just quiet basement club. And Lem goes on the machine.
Mm-hmm.
And an hour later, he's still on the machine. And I'm just sitting there with a beer, everything. 3 hours later, he's still on the machine. He's just looking across. Are you all right, Phil? I'm all right, Lem. I thought, I did that before I realized he was a gamer and loved his games.
Right.
Which was great. It's totally innocent. Like, you know, he just loved all that. To the end, he did. We used to carry, you know, seen the machines in his dressing rooms and stuff. But, yeah, he was good. He's very, very approachable. Like, yeah. You know, he was good. Yeah, he just always was himself.
Mm-hmm.
And when he realized that you're not getting any crap off the guy, it's easier for you because you know you're in the real deal. Like whether mm-hmm. you like it or not, you know there's it's the truth. So you're not worried. Is he being like this for any reason? Why you just know what you get. So it does make life easier. But he was good as gold.
Mm-hmm. That was always
his role, you know that, man.
And I think once again, going back to what he said, that's why so many people showed respect for him at his passing. Because, and I'm sure there are people that say bad things about Lemmy, but I've never heard it in the world of rock and roll with all the people that I know. And that's a pretty rare thing. Nobody to go, man. That guy's a
wanker. No, it's very rare, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It really
is. As rare as you buying a pint.
That's that never happens. So that's super rare. Yeah.
Huh?
when Wurzel left the band when you guys were a four piece. And went back to a three-piece. Was there ever an idea to get another guitar player, or what was the decision made to go back to a three-piece with you as the soul?
Like before anyone said anything, I said, "Listen, boys, I truly believe it's going to sound great as a three-piece." I said, "Let's give it a go." And believe me, I told them, if we need another guitar player other than myself, I'll be the first one to say that. But after, the boys, Mickey will tell you now because he's the only one left
mm-hmm.
alive, unfortunately. But they'll say after the first two or three songs in the rehearsal room, it was obvious that it was going to work fine. But if I didn't have any problem with another guitar player, but if it hadn't have worked, but it was better with the three of us, I think, and it worked. So, well, I was quite willing. That's what I said. That's what I told them anyway. So. Yeah.
Well, and now that you know years later that Lemmy was the one that wanted you in the band beforehand, that's probably one of the reasons why it was easy for him to agree to it.
I got everyone to agree to my things anyway, Chris.
But yeah, because you won't stop whining about it.
I know. I never thought of it that way. Now I only found out about I was Lemmy's choice like recently, kind of thing. But
it was all
good. We got out. A great legacy of music and everything, and I came from the studio today. Actually, I rushed back. I've been recording some new songs today for my old stuff.
Well, let me ask you this. Talking about the Motorhead style of songwriting, how did that work? Because you guys are very prolific. You put out a new record every 2 years, every 18 months. When it was time to do a record, how did you guys put it together?
I try and come up with as much riffs and ideas as I could. It wouldn't be a great deal, really. But basically, I would come up with a lot of the main riffs and, mm-hmm. you know, stuff like that, and then play them to the boys, and then we'd all argue. Somebody'd say that's shit, somebody'd say that's wonderful, and then we'd all start arguing and everything. And, you know, but it's good, though, because that's why the music is good, because we never wrote or recorded for record companies, for fans. We did it for us three.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we didn't. We did it for us. We wrote the music, well, the three of us liked, or the four of us liked. No, for nobody else. Not, you know, some fans may find that a little bit insulting, but it makes it, you know, that's just it's purity then. You know, otherwise right. You get a watered-down bunch of shit, don't it, really? So I think that's helped. That's helped the respect and the longevity of Motorhead. It's a good legacy, like, you know.
So would Lemmy come up with some riffs as well? Would everybody?
Yeah. Mickey be singing riffs in my head and stuff. And be, you know, it was a band thing.
A group.
Occasionally, Lem would just come up with an entire song, like a nice rocker song.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe one an album in its entirety. Lem did all the lyrics, obviously. We let him do the lyrics because he was the best at the lyrics, you know.
Mm-hmm. He's got to sing them too, so he's got to feel them.
Yeah. And I think you'll agree as well. He's one of the best. It's like poetry, isn't it? A lot of the stuff, you know.
Poetry, historical. Yeah. That's you know, that's one thing with Lemmy too. You know, going to his house and seeing all of his artifacts that he had from all the, you know, the World War I and World War II artifacts. It was incredible how much stuff he had in his apartment and how much he knew about every item.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Do you know what? This is a good point, actually. If there was a word I never understood, like a, you know, not a word regularly used in English language,
mm-hmm.
right? I wouldn't be, you know, I'd be fine. I'd say, hey, Lem, what does this word mean, right? And not once did he not know what it meant, not even one time in all his years.
Really?
And you know, I'm not illiterate or nothing. You know, I read a lot and stuff, but a guy, he read so much.
Yeah.
He was very intelligent in that, you know.
Did he go and look at, you know, different, castles or battlefields or historical places when you guys were on the road?
Yeah.
Did you guys ever go together?
Especially like in the earlier days when, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, he'd go out in tanks and we'd go and he'd say, see that, but that's where this happened or... This is where that's happened, or 10,000 people were slaughtered there, or this is, well, whatever. You know, and he hated war. He wasn't a Nazi, whatever. He'd buy an outfit or something, you know, or a dagger, and he'd look at the intricacy of, look at the thing on that, look at the handle, look at that, look at the munching the craftsmanship on that, well, that took, that sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
you know. You know, he hated violence and war, you know, and, you know, people, anyone who's got any doubt, we should put that to bed right now, you know.
Right, so yeah, I had him on my show and he's like, you know, if someone thinks I'm a Nazi, he goes, I've got a black girlfriend, I've got hair down on my shoulders, and I hate war. I'd be the worst Nazi ever. Yeah. That's
it was. I know we'll miss the old fruit.
Well, it's hard for you. You mentioned you're doing some riffs of your own now and stuff. Because I find this happened with Vinnie Paul when Dimebag passed away. You lose your partner, you lose your best friend, and you also lose your band. So what does that mean for you as a performer and as a player at this point?
Well, I started writing some stuff from a sort. Like last year,
mm-hmm.
Basically, like I've just been taking. Well, it's only really this now with this interview. This is the first time I've actually, you know, gone anything kind of public with it. I've done a few tweets here and there,
right.
But I can actually have the time now to do stuff, everything in my life, which I would never, was too busy to do. Or, you know, I'm going to try and get my solo record good now. I'm going to try and do my book.
Mm.
I've got offers to go and, you know, play with so many people.
Oh, have you? That's cool.
Concerts. And then my all-star band, of course, with my kids and Mr. Neil Starr. So we've been booking up for festivals now and everything, and we're going to record a lot of stuff there. So, you know, I'm going to keep busy, like, you know. I don't know yet. It's going to be to do with music. I've always got to play music and everything, you know. Stuff like that.
And Motorhead was so busy. You guys were touring all the time, it seemed like. So that's part of your DNA at this point after 30 years of doing that.
Yeah, no, I know. It's weird. I've broken down a few times. Like, and my wife's gone, "Oh, come on, Phil, try and get over it," stuff. And I said, "Yeah, but I expect to be packing now. You know, every 2 weeks I was going away for 3 weeks.
Right.
You know, but it's really weird at the moment. But you know, you got to try and celebrate it all. Really, it's no good digging myself a hole and everything. I'm really, really sad that Lem's no longer with us, and Phil Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
Bowie's gone, but I only met Bowie once. I didn't know him, like, knew Lem and all that, you know. So Lem is the most affected me more than anything, like, obviously. But you wouldn't want me to just sit there, you know, and stuff, and... You know,
well, yeah, it's funny because he even said in the past, it's like, you know, if I die and the other guys want to continue on as Motorhead, I wouldn't care. But obviously you can never do that. But he definitely wants you to continue playing and doing your thing.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, one of our best friends told me the other day, he'd been speaking to Lem the last year or two, and he said, "Oh, I know for a fact that Lem, he wouldn't want anything happen to him." He said, "I know Lem told me that he wouldn't want anything like to stop me and everything like that." But I mean, you know, nothing's ever going to be called Motorhead again. I can tell you that now, 100%. So it's just, you know, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't disrespect. Well, it's not Motorhead without Lem, is it?
Would you ever consider doing like a one-off at a festival, like a tribute to Lemmy type thing with you and Mickey and you know, special guests or something along those lines?
Yeah, we've had offers. I do some stuff for you know, special guests and some charity stuff maybe. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't do a tour in. I wouldn't do a proper. I wouldn't entertain any of that. I'd miss it. I'd miss Lem on it, you know.
Yeah.
I'll do concerts, occasional concert, like, yeah, for good causes, you know. Or,
yeah.
You know.
Because that's the thing.
Maybe even for money, I can afford to wear a leather jacket.
No, you can't afford that type of financial strain. Tell us a little bit about Filthy Animal Taylor, Phil Taylor, because he passed away very recently as well, maybe only a month or two before Lem did.
He was always quick off the mark, Filthy. Yeah, he was another character. Mm-hmm. He was insane. This Motorhead's band of sanity. there's never been anyone like Taylor. Actually, me and Lem watched him once try to get out of the revolving door of the Hyatt. I think the Hyatt Hotel on Sunset. I think he was out in a revolving door. It took him 3.5 minutes to get out. He had his dark glasses on, and we used to. We used to run it before airport security. If you stood behind Filthy, you might as well go and take a coffee break. You'd have whips and chains and leather. Taking hours. That's why I got a steel plate on my ankle. I still got it because years ago in Lille, just outside France.
Yeah.
I just bought new cowboy boots. Really, an hour before. I went into the dressing room and I said, "Filthy, you drum like a f-." And he looked at me and he went, "Poof." And he punched me and my ankle went over the dressing room bit, over the step. And I still my ankle. I had to go to hospital, everything. I was in a cast for 6 weeks and everything. But it was brilliant. He's not a lunatic, like.
Well, that was that.
Every night towards when Filthy was with us, we'd be playing away and Filthy would play something. It says nothing at all to do with the song. We'd be in the middle of a song, he'd be tapping away, and he'd play something so bizarre. Me and them would look at each other like, I'd go, "What the hell was that?" And then in the dressing room, after the gig, I say, "Filthy, what the f was that you played in that song like that? And he'd say exactly the same thing every night. Well, I thought I held it down quite nicely. Every night. Good old days, eh? I know. Yeah, Stuffy was great. He's a lovely guy. He was a lovely guy. It was great that we brought him on. He turned up to see us at Download, I think. I think it was Download, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, we brought him on the stage.
But that was always, you mentioned, you know, Motorhead was a group of, you know, insane guys. And that was kind of Motorhead's reputation, was the amount of, you know, liquor you could drink and kind of the mayhem and the craziness of Motorhead. Now, obviously, some of that is showbiz myth. But, I mean, I've seen it, you know, there's some truth to that, though.
Oh, it's loads of it. Wait till my book comes out. It's going to make Lamb seem like a bloody Old Testament. Really.
Just from the...
It's going to be... Yeah. The stuff I can... Well, all the funny stuff, you won't believe it. We must believe it. It's total insanity, like, but we survived it somehow.
So what did you...
You're going to love it. Your books as well. My boy Todd, he's read one of your books. He recommends it highly.
Well, you know...
He hasn't read the second one yet, but I'll start reading them, shall I?
Will
I be impressed or not?
I think so. You'll see a lot of similarities between, you know, Motorhead and my world, and that, you know, when you're on the road, and this is the thing, when you're on the road for months at a time, like you said, home for 2 weeks, gone for 4 weeks, you have to let off steam, and it does make us crazier than the average person. And we do stuff that people would never even think of doing, and it's just an average day for us.
Well, seeing a professional wrestler and singer let off steam is something that you have to see before you die. It's brilliant, isn't it? Especially with the wrestlers, like, you go, oh, fuck, you know, they get outside, they all about six cigars in each hand, some of them, everything.
Would you guys go out after the show as a band sometimes?
Now and again, yeah. It'd be good. It'd be great fun, wouldn't it?
Would you go out with other bands as well? Like, who did you like to hang out with from some of the other bands that you could go and have some fun with?
Well, everyone could hang out with me. He's basically been the last one to be chosen when he picked out for the football team in school. It wasn't who I'd like to hang out with. It was who did hang out with Campbell, basically. You know, try me. You try me again. No, I'm a good boy now.
Yeah, well, that's
and
that's one of the reasons why you're still here. But back in those days,
I'm surviving. Yeah, I'm doing good.
When you're talking about like Motorhead songs, which are some of your favorite ones that maybe are a little bit more obscure, ones that you wrote more on your own that you always had a special place for?
I like Snakebite Love, the track called Snakebite Love. That was a good one. And if it was entirely up to doing for the last, I don't know, 10 years, it would be entirely different, you know. I'd only keep Ace of Spades in, maybe Overkill, and I'd change everything else around, but that's why we'd argue about the set lists and things and stuff, you know. And there's so many songs all the time, Chris, but Snakebite Love is good. I don't know if you want to play that for some people.
Well, I mean, the thing is, too, it's a hard mix, too, because you have so many classic Motorhead songs, but yet your new records always had great stuff. I think every year the records seem to get better than the one before it. Even Bad Magic, it's a great record it's a good way to say goodbye to Motorhead if you're going to listen to some new Motorhead.
That was pretty stressful. I was so stressed at that one. I went and sat by Ronnie Dio's grave, good old Ronnie. I sat with him for an hour.
Really? Well, to talk to him about what?
Lem's opposite him now. They can wave to each other. Archie's next door, I think.
What did you go talk to Ronnie about at his grave?
No, everything. I just had enough. I just was so stressed doing the last album in Bad Magic. It turned out great.
Mm-hmm.
I just saw one Saturday. We had a Saturday off, and I just went, oh, I've got to go and see Adam Jones from Tool. He wanted to come with me as well, but he was really pissed off. I didn't, but I just sat with Ronnie and just the private stuff. It was great. It was really good. I love Ronnie. Ronnie was amazing as well. I miss Ronnie so much as well.
In what way? Tell us a little about Dio.
Oh, he was one of the funniest guys in the world, man. Every time we toured with him, he'd come up to Mickey and he'd say suppose, is any chance of is Phil going to be wearing some of his summer collection? You like to see me wearing dresses and everything? he was brilliant, Ronnie. He was the funniest guy. He told me the funniest thing in the world once in the corridor, and I've been trying to think what it was. We just laughed so much. We watched Man of War once, and we're watching him, come on, we're on tour with them guys, and we're watching the drummer, he's hitting his cymbals, and they're not moving and everything. And Ronnie's going, look at his fucking cymbals, Campbell, look, they're not even fucking moving. I was standing behind Ronnie with a glass of milk, and it all went all over his hair, everything. We didn't care, though. Ronnie was a trooper. You knew Ronnie as well. He was brilliant, Ronnie.
Absolutely, man. Great guy. Very, very, like you
and
said.
One time I went up to his, he gave me the address first time I went up to his house. The address now, so I press, I think I'm at the right place, so I see these big blue gates, but it's got wizards and stars and, you know, and rainbows on it. So I press the button, these gates open, and I drive up the big driveway like that, and I walk in, and the maid in there, I said, all right, can you tell Ronnie Phil's here? Well, Ronnie? No, Ronnie here. No, this Tom Petty house. I went, oh, sorry. I went back out. I said, Ronnie, what's for your fucking house? I said, I just went into the Wizards and the Stars gates like that. She said, it was Tom Petty's house. She said, oh, yeah, I wouldn't have cheap gates like him. She said, I'm next door. But apparently they used to throw each other's garbage over. They didn't like each other for some point. The grumpy old men. Yeah, they used to chuck garbage over each other's walls, which I thought was funny, but I think they made up towards it.
there's an unknown.
Yeah, if you see gates, right, with wizards and rainbows on them, right, and stars, you've got to be Ronnie's, right?
Of course.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't have them cheap fucking things. Mine are prop of oak from England. All his house, he had all the best wood flown in from England and everything. It was brilliant. And then I beat him. I beat him on his snooker, on his own snooker table. I beat him. He wasn't happy with that. It was brilliant.
Oh, man.
He was a funny fucker.
I love the Rock.
Yeah, I love Ronnie, yeah. It was great.
Petty versus Dio, the rock and roll blood feud that no one knew about.
Wendy told me, yeah, they used to throw the garbage trash over. I wouldn't have f***ing cheap gates like Petty. Brilliant. Couldn't make it up.
So you mentioned being stressed out doing Bad Magic. What was stressful about it?
Because the other boys wouldn't listen to me.
Oh, okay.
I was right and they were wrong.
Obviously.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you know.
Who?
You know, but it's always good. If it's too easy, it's not worth doing.
How was Lemmy's his vocals? Like, he sounds good on the record. Was it hard to get that performance out of him? Was he in good health when you guys tracked that record?
Yeah. When you said good health, like, yeah, he was good. I don't know. I still don't know how he accomplished what he did all the time, Lem.
Mm-hmm.
He just pulled something out. He must have had, he got something inside him and just do it. It's like the way he just kept Motörhead together. Like, you know, we've had some bad, like we've had an amazing manager now in the organization, Todd Singerman, for many years now.
Great guy.
But before that and stuff, you know, we were penniless for years and, you know, nobody wanted to sign us and
really
book us. I don't know. It's just something kept him going. Like, you know, he was just unique. It's not, nobody's going to be ever like him. Todd Rundgren told me, he said, oh, we shan't see his like again. And he was bloody dead right, you know.
Well, I mean, amazing. Those guys came from a different era. You mentioned Bowie and, you know, guys like that coming from the 70s all the way to the, you know, year 2016, still being relevant, still creating, still being excellent performers. That 40-year career, yeah, you're right. You're not going to see a lot more iconic guys like that.
Nah, it's not going to. It's not. It's changing, isn't it? It's not going to be. I don't know. We got to keep. We got to teach our people, Chris. We got to teach people how it should be done.
Oh yeah.
You know,
the rock and roll way.
A bit. We have to follow on. We can't let people like Lem go without. People have to learn. Have to learn. You know, you've got to have fun with it all. If you're in a business just to make money, forget about it. You got to have fun with it. You got to be a character, and you got to be nice to people and stuff. And then, and you love, and things will be good for you. Then I think.
When you said Motorhead was penniless, was that like in the 90s? Was it a tough time for Motorhead? Or what was Motorhead's lowest peak?
The lowest time when we met you.
Softball. That was an easy one.
You, they are.
Yeah, that was an easy one.
That caught you, didn't it?
Yeah.
I'm serious, folks. I'm serious.
As iconic as Motorhead is in this day and age, because let me mention that too. He said we didn't mean anything in the States until that movie came out in about 2009 or so. So there was some tough times for Motorhead during certain years of your career.
No, we had some tough times. It took us, you know, I don't really remember, but the early days were tough, like 20
gotcha.
Years ago. They were tough, like, yeah. Lem didn't know anything about it. Lem was a very wealthy man, actually, but he didn't keep account of it or nothing. Like, he has no idea what his estate is, probably. He has no idea. He just going down a casino, like.
Mm-hmm.
But it was in the early days, yeah. It was, you know, we shouldn't have had, people used to take our money, you know, and we'd be too, they keep us too busy. They keep us on the road, like, and you know, we can't sue. You can see the lawyer next week, and then by the time next week came, we'd be off on the road, and you'd forget about it.
Right.
You know, they make sure you had plenty of beer in your dressing room, whatever you wanted, and then they'd take you for thousands of millions. Like, but all's well it ends well. Like,
was Lemmy the sole owner of Motorhead type thing? Was it his I don't know, corporation or ownership or whatever?
No, there's four of us.
Oh, good. So you're a partner in Motorhead.
Always have been since day one. Yeah.
That's great. So as soon as you got...
I called you from Florida, from Wales. If I wasn't a stroke, you'd be calling me, mate.
So that's interesting to me, though. So as soon as you were made a member of the band, you got part ownership of the band as well.
Yeah. And a good thing with Lem as well, melodies and the lyrics... Legally, he was entitled for 50% of the songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, the other band members, including Lem, would split the other 50.
Mm-hmm.
But he never did that. We all just split it all straight away.
Oh, so he really...
all three ways.
He really believed in the concept of a band in all sense of the word.
It was his band. He'd do anything for his band. I'm not having my band do this. I'm not having my... Loved it. He loved it. Yeah, you got it. You hit the nail on the head there, Chris.
Yeah.
He loved it.
Once again, shows what kind of a honorable guy that he was.
Yeah. I know, yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the fans of Motorhead, because it's an army. You know, it's a real a lifetime thing. You go to Germany and Motorhead is life. What do you think it is about Motorhead that had such a loyal fan base worldwide?
I don't know, I guess. There's got to be something to do with the music. Like, we write for ourselves, and we just write... We want people... We just write what we think's good music and want people to come and just get drunk and have a good time for an hour and a half in the night, you know, and then they go back to work the next day and stuff. I don't know. You have to ask them people, Chris. I don't know. You have to ask them. I'm not sure, mate. I really don't know. I think it's... Because it's got to be to do with the music, though, and
it's real.
You know, and we try, you know, sometimes we don't want to speak to people like after the show or before for whatever reason. You can't do it every night.
Mm-hmm.
Most nights we try to do it, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes they just might catch you on an off night, and then they say, "Oh, Cambo is an asshole. He didn't come out. He, whatever." Some we can't be a, you know, we do it 300 nights a year.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of thing. But
I think it's because Motorhead is real.
The music stayed true to itself, I think.
Yeah.
Over all these years, you know, and we never tried to put a filler song on an album just to make it up. We tried to write the best we could every time, you know, and sometimes it turned out better than other times, but we did try our best, and I think that kind of rubs off, and we showed up. Well, apart from when we got ill, a few of us now and again, we showed up at the gigs. But we never tried it. We never had really bad gigs compared to other bands. Like 97% of our shows were top notch. 2% of them weren't top notch, and 1% was horrible. Like,
which is this the nature of the business? You know, I mean,
we had more good gigs. Yeah, we used to have fun. People could see us having the fun on stage. You know.
I always
we'd laugh on stage. Me and Lemmy, we'd be laughing, and Mick, we'd, even if everything was going wrong, like things were blowing up, we'd look around. There's no computers on there. Like, we'd just bloody do it. You know,
yeah.
If we fell over on stage, we'd just let him laugh, you know?
Right. I heard a saying once is Motorhead is like pizza and sex. Even when it's bad, it's still good. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Motorhead is always good, no matter what.
It is. You could have a lot worse than that slot. You could have, like, a bad pizza. Should have called the album Bad Pizza, maybe.
There's your solo album. Just a couple more questions, Phil. I just want to ask you, what are you going to miss most about Lemmy?
Just going downstairs, one of the things on our bus, just not being able to just go to his room and hang out and buy him gifts. And like he'd be awake, he'd sleep in the daytime, Lem. He'd be awake most of the night, reading or on his computer and stuff. And I'd on a tour bus, I'd have the room upstairs, and the toilet would be downstairs. And I think we come down in the middle of the night for a pee or whatever, or grab, and you know, and he'd be there. He'd be at this table downstairs. I think I'd miss that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just miss not being able to call him up, and not being able to tell him he's playing too loud on stage, turn it down, you asshole. I really miss that. And he'd say, what do you mean? You're louder than me. You turn it down first. And I'd say, no, you can do it. It was brilliant. Every night, it was brilliant. It was. You will not believe it. We could, even though it's majorly loud on stage, we could still hear the words asshole and twat. we could prick. Everything. We could hear that. I'd turn it down, you. Why? We could hear the expletive, the swear words. Great. We was finally tuned in. even though it was a million thousand watts on stage, you could hear me call him a twat and turn it down, you prick from Stoke. Everything like, and he'd say, "Shut up, you Welsh twat. Turn it down yourself first." We could hear all that. It was brilliant. I'll definitely miss all that. Yeah.
Just the camaraderie of being in a band
brilliant.
With them.
It was brilliant. Yeah. It was nothing quite like it, Chris. It was amazing.
Well, and that's the thing. Motorhead too. You're not joking. So loud on stage, so loud. How could you put up with that? Like, as a player, doesn't that drive you nuts?
You just think about, no, it's good. It's brilliant. In the end, we're so deaf. it's just quite normal in the end, really. All the top end is gone.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't. If a snake came up behind me hissing, I couldn't hear it. I have a huge watch collection, and I can't hear any of my watches tick because all the top end's gone. But it's just normal in the end. It's all been ruined anyway. It's good, actually.
I have a visual image of you going to, like, Africa and a snake coming up behind you and just biting you in the ass.
Yeah, I have no chance, right?
Yeah, so stay away from snake.
You have to be behind me. You should be in one of your car. Just looking out. I could pay you. I could afford you to. You could be my minder there.
Well, now that I know that you're a partner in Motorhead, man, I want to come work for you. You got way more money than I do.
Yeah, too late, Dave.
Last question, Phil. What were your favorite Motorhead songs to play on stage?
If it was a horrible, bad sound, the last one. No, I'm just joking. Spades, that was great. Just because you got the power, I used to like that.
Mm-hmm.
It gives me a little chance to play something not frantic, because I'm a blues player at heart.
Absolutely.
I'm not a heavy metal player. I had the slowest right hand in the business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was good. In the end, you know, if it's a good crowd, they're all good, because we wouldn't have written them. We wouldn't have released them. We wouldn't play them.
Mm-hmm.
But I like doing that, power and everything, Ace of Spades. It's hard to say, really. It's always, the first song is always good, whatever different ones we start with. It's just an adrenaline thing. It's like you, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's like you saying, what's your favorite moves you used to do?
Right.
On the wrestling and everything and stuff, you know. Oh, I know what yours is, when you get your bloody face close to a pit of bollocks.
Yeah, and looking up at the lights, that's my best move.
The lights, yeah. That's what you call them now, is it? I call them testicles, I call them. That's what you call them over here. Yeah.
I never told you this before. It's an interesting thing. You mentioned how you're a blues player. And we were on the bus about a year ago when Malcolm Young was diagnosed with dementia, and he had to leave AC/DC. And I was like, Phil Campbell could play that gig. He could be in AC/DC. That's your kind of style. You could lay into that and lock into it.
I never thought of that before. Yeah.
Rich and I were both thinking that's your style of playing. Really chunky rhythms with some really bluesy stuff going on. We thought if anyone could do it, I bet you Phil could do it.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice for you. Yeah. Rich is great, isn't he? Tell Rich I said hello.
I will, man.
Everything. Yeah, he's a good interviewer as well. Yeah, we had a classic interview, didn't we?
That's right. Yeah, he interviewed
that's
you for Guitar Magazine.
And everything. Yeah,
that's great. It, man. Well, Phil,
he's not quite as good as you, but he's
learning. He's learning. Yeah, he's much nicer than me, though. I have no time to be nice to you.
His interviews are a bit shorter. They don't go on for an hour.
Yeah,
especially when you're half an hour late. I'm missing my favorite soap now because of you. Lucky I can afford a video recorder, a VCR.
Well, it's not like you have a band. You don't have a band anymore. You got nothing to do, so you should be happy that you got to talk to me for an hour.
I don't know why I agreed to this with you all the time. Hey, listeners, Phil, don't ever agree to anything with Jericho. Check the small print out first.
Phil, you're a great guy, man, and no matter what happens, I know you're going to be playing for a long time to come. You're a great player. And
you're on my solo record anyway. You agreed. You won't want to remember it because you were sober. You agreed. You agreed to sing on a song.
I'm in. Just tell me when. Tell me when and where. I'll be there.
I'll give you a choice of a couple of songs, right? So.
Yeah, well,
you'll be in good company. Halford's agreed, and Whitfield's going to sing it and stuff like that.
Well, I already came and played with you at Bloodstock and saved the show for you there, so I'll be happy to come do the same on your solo record.
That's good. Well, I played on your bloody album.
You did, and you played with us at Bloodstock too.
Fozzy album, yeah.
Yeah, man.
Mind you, I agreed to that when I was drunk. You agreed when you were sober. It's the same.
Phil,
that's
it's
a
great.
Good one, actually, yeah, agreed when you're sober. Yeah, that's a good one. I want to patent that phrase.
Yeah, I'm going to put it on a T-shirt and sell them, so you'll never get the rights.
You're probably doing it now.
Yeah, I already said it in the order to my lawyers.
On the phone now. You're your producer. You got one hand on a tweeting it now T-shirt. Sod. I want a sleeve off that jacket, right?
I'll cut it in half. You wear one half. I'll wear the other half, and we'll go on stage. We'll do a Siamese twin act. Phil, man.
Chris,
I'm all good, man.
So much fun, man. I enjoyed doing these with you every year. It's great.
Yeah, you were great, man. It was cool to hear some of those stories. So I appreciate you sharing that with us.
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, you know, this is the first time I've spoke to since Lem's passed and everything. But I'm glad he was with you and everyone out there. Listen, there's loads of good music out there, Motorhead stuff. It's not just Ace of Spades, so check out all the things, and I'm sure everyone will find some hidden gems that they didn't know.
Yeah, the music lives on forever, for sure. Yeah.
Cool. And look out for Fozzy as well, supporting Phil Campbell's All-Star Band in the near future.
It'd be Phil Campbell's All-Foz Band.
Ah, f*** off.
All right, buddy. Good talking to you, man. Thanks, Phil.
Okay, you're welcome. Bye, Chris.
Thanks to Phil Campbell, my old friend, played on the Fozzy tune She's My Addiction. Great, great tune. And that was his first interview since his brother-in-arms Lemmy from Motorhead passed away barely a month ago. Thanks to Phil for coming on Talk Is Jericho and sharing his stories and memories of Lemmy. We're looking forward to Phil's solo record. I mean, he played on our record. Maybe he'll invite me to play on his. I don't know. But so far, he's got some huge names. The metal god Rob Halford of Judas Priest is going to be there. Whit Crane from Ugly Kid Joe is going to be there. So many cool names. Phil's got a great reputation. He's a great guy. And if you want to remember Lemmy and celebrate Motorhead, I got a good way to do it. Go order all of their albums on Amazon. Bad Magic, their newest album, their last album is tremendous. Go check it out. And if you do order Bad Magic or any other Motorhead album, use the Talk Is Jericho Amazon links. You can get the new Megadeth album, Dystopia, debuted at number 3 in the charts. Congratulations to my bro, Dave Mustaine, and the rest of Megadeth. Also on Talk Is Jericho a few episodes ago. Go listen to that. Support two great bands and Talk Is Jericho with one quick click. Go to podcastone.com, click on the killer deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hit the Talk Is Jericho button. I got Amazon links for the USA, the UK, and Canada. Every time you use the Talk Is Jericho Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a small percentage to the show to help us cover production costs. You can buy just about anything you want on Amazon. Use the Talk Is Jericho Amazon links. It won't cost you anything extra. No hidden fees or extra charges. Go to podcastone.com, click on the killer deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hit the Talk Is Jericho button. All of my sponsors are there too. You have easy access to ddpyoga.com/Jericho and the new DDP Yoga Now app to betdsi.com, to Solar World, Geico, so many great sponsors. We thank them all. Please check them out. Thank you for listening. Keep on listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up right after this. Stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs. See you on Friday for one of the newest members of the WWE roster. Everyone's talking about the new kid in town, AJ Styles. He is here. His first interview since being in the WWE exclusively with Talk is Jericho. He returns to talk about his amazing debut at the Royal Rumble, his first impressions of the WWE, his overall goals. AJ Styles will be here on Friday. Stick around, check it out. You're not going to want to miss it. We'll see you then. Yeah, boy!
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.